Jeff Merrick, as you know, our draft party is this Thursday night, 9 p.m. in Fort Lauderdale. We don't have a venue change, but evidently we have a name of venue change, according to Paige.
Not unlike what Phoenix/Arizona just went through last season. We have something similar.
That's right. Yeah, this is the Coyotes of bars in Fort Lauderdale, where we have been talking about our party being at Dirty Blondes, but now it's just Blondies, which I imagine is either influenced.
Yeah, I think it was originally Blondies, and they changed it to Dirty Blondes, and now they've gone back to Blondies. I think that's the way it worked.
Oh, is that what it was? So they went through like a bad Superman phase of being Dirty Blondes. They went through a heel turn.
I think they had their new Coke phase, and now they've gone back.
New Coke phase, an interesting turn of phrase for a Fort Lauderdale bar.
Yeah, I played that one, Sam, for a drop later on.
Anyways, so the party is still this Thursday night, 9 p.m., me and Merrick both there, along with Paige, Jameson Cooper from Fox Sports Florida, Chris M. and Mike O'Brien from Sunshine Skate, Ball Panthers bloggers, and then a cast of thousands will also be there. I believe the lovely and talented Sean Leahy from Puck Daddy will be there, but Josh Cooper will be flying in later that night, so he won't be there.
Texting with Strombo the other night. That sounds like he's going to pop by. Corey Hirsch, I think, is going to be there as well. And it's whatever sort of riffraff I can drag along with me.
I think Paige said our party is right next to the official media party or something, like the party that George Richards is doing.
George Richards put one together, yeah.
So I think what we should do is obviously send over a couple of the listeners to paper their party with flyers and pamphlets and then just steal all of George's guests.
Total Stern Show on them.
That's right.
Go Baba Booey on them.
For them all.
Okay. Yeah, works.
All right, so that's the party. Everybody, 21 and older, by the way, but everybody do stop by. It's going to be our draft parties are always a ton of fun, so stop by if you're in town. And you know, say hi to me and say hi to Jeffy, and it'll be a fun time.
That's 21 chronologically, not mentally. So don't worry if you're like mentally an infant, but you got any birth certificate, you're good to go.
Yeah, mentally it's like 12 and older. So I mean, you'll be in good shape there. I have in front of me Jeff Merrick penned his own mock draft for Sportsnet, which is exciting.
Totally excited.
Apparently he believes McDavid goes at one, and apparently he believes Eichel goes at two. Yeah, very controversial. Yeah.
Very controversial.
The draft really gets interesting at three, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be all that interesting because now everybody seems lined up that the Coyotes are going to take Dylan Strome and keep the pick. Is that how you see it?
It's an interesting time of year because, as you well know, this is a time of year around the draft where lies is such a strong word. there's some, how do we call it, creative truthing that goes along with this time of year. So every indication that I get is that Arizona is interested in Dylan Strome. And talking to people around the organization, they're quick to admit to you that they need help everywhere. And as much as they would, you know, love to grab, you know, Noah Hanifin or Ivan Provorov, the thoughts of, you know, remaining or trying to get competitive in the Western Conference without a big horse down the middle, when you have a shot to get them, you know, the chances of being competitive are pretty slim. So it sounds as if they're pretty solid on taking Strome. However, you do wonder if they are, you know, allowing those whispers to be more than whispers in order to maybe drum up some interest in that pick. Like if you're someone that really wants Dylan Strome and, you know, you let it be known that, well, no, Arizona's going to be taking that player, all of a sudden the phone calls start and the trade negotiations start. So I still think they'll end up taking Strome, but it wouldn't surprise me because this is a time of the year where, let's all say it together, creative truthing happens.
Creative truthing happens.
Yeah.
I was talking to Craig Button before, and he made a good point, which is that because the first and second picks are cemented in place, Don Maloney has the first pick that could actually move, which is always an interesting position to be in. So that's why there's so much action around three this year, while in previous years there might not have been. Here's the thing. The Toronto Maple Leafs are essentially the pin in the grenade. You know, you pull this pin, no matter who they pick, and it's going to set up the next four, five, six, seven picks in the draft. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, as we talked about yesterday on the podcast with your junior podcast buddy, Sam Constantino.
Yeah.
A lot of people are saying forward spot for the Leafs at three, in particular Mitch Marner, in particular a London Knight, in particular Mark Hunter is their amateur director of player personnel. But you, sir, Jeff Merrick, draft expert, believe that the Toronto Maple Leafs will select Noah Hanifin, a defenseman from Boston College at four.
I just wonder what the dynamic of the conversations are like now that Mike Babcock is there. And, you know, all indications that I get are that he wants a defenseman, whether it's Ivan Provorov or Noah Hanifin. I know Sam's a big Provorov guy. I am too, but I'm still maybe even a bigger fan of Noah Hanifin. That size, moves his feet that way, eats that many minutes, plays all situations. I got all the time in the world for Noah Hanifin. So part of me saying that Hanifin is going to go number four to Toronto, I mean, because I don't think the pick is solidified yet. I've been led to believe there are two camps. There's Camp Marner and there's Camp Defenseman. And this is going to be a real test for Brendan Shanahan, you know, which this is this is where, you know, we don't have a GM. It's up to you, Shanny, I mean, to settle the debate. Babcock likes teams that are built from the blue line out, case in point, the one that he just left to join Toronto. And but here's the thing that I wonder about Mark Hunter, and maybe I'm overthinking this one. Let me know what you thought. If you're Mark Hunter, do you want your first pick to be the guy from your junior team? Like, do you want to make it look like, oh, yeah, he got the job, and, oh, look, he's grabbing a kid from the London Knights because, of course, he's going to grab a kid from the London Knights. Am I overthinking that?
I feel you on that, but there's also part of me that thinks the reason he's in that position is because of his knowledge base.
Yep.
So rather than seeing it as nepotism, they're going to see it as, okay, this guy knows this kid better than anybody else making a pick today. Yep. If he says that Marner's golden, he's golden. So I think there's an element of trust there, too, that they know what they're getting into.
Yeah, here's the other thing. I wonder how much, and again, maybe this comes to best player available, although we're not seeing a lot of that as much as we have before in the past. But if you're the Maple Leafs and you look down, you know, your depth charts, you say to yourself, well, you know, we grabbed Willie Nylander. We've got Connor Brown. Do we want another, you know, forward who's under 6 feet tall?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Do we want that, or do we want to go grab now? Provorov's not 6'5", but he's 6 feet tall, and he can play all over the ice. And you know, Hanifin, I've gushed about him for a while now. You know, or do we want that guy? You know, between whether it's Provorov or Noah Hanifin, you know, alongside Morgan Riley, all of a sudden your defense is set for 10 years.
Right, and obviously Dion Phaneuf at the end of his contract. I mean,
if
Hanifin goes at four, that means Marner goes at five, and everybody's going to love Marner because Tyler Johnson made the world safe for undersized forwards to excel in this league. But
yeah, he could. Although, you know what? Maybe. Again, if Hanifin falls to five, then Carolina's got a steal. I guess I've been on the show last week. Knowing what Hanifin brings, I have a hard time seeing Hanifin going five. But who knows? Friday's going to be interesting.
But here's the essential thing that we need to talk about.
Yep.
You have now joined a chorus of people that believe that Pavel Zacha, the center from Sarnia, and maybe my favorite player in the draft other than the top two,
is going to be
a New Jersey Devil.
Yeah, they have had some history with Czech hockey players. I'm sure you've studied your history there. here's the thing. I mean, you know, he had a big suspension this year in Sarnia. Had some injuries as well. So some you know, by all scouts' accounts, limited viewing of this player this year. But you know, the times that he did play, Sarnia should have been better this year. Will be better next year. He played basically with Jordan Kyrou, who you're going to hear a lot of next year, and Nikita Kerestelev, who we heard a lot of at the beginning of this year, and then really tailed off as you know.
Now hold. Now let me stop you there. That's Jordan Kyrou, not Caillou, right?
That's right. This is not the lovely children's TV show, which is one of our.
Because I did see
exports here from Canada.
I did see that episode where Caillou played hockey, and he might be a 98. He might be a 98, so I think that the potential's there that this could be his draft year coming up.
I think he's a late 97. I think he can
Mommy, why can't I be in the NHL draft? Oh, Caillou.
Right, Dad calling me is 98. I don't get that. so he essentially played a line with, you know, with a rookie in Jordan Kyrou, who's draft years until next season, and Nikita Kurestlev, who is just one of the most, oh God, you look at him and like the skill set is there and all of it. Just does he want to play? You wonder at times. So, I wouldn't necessarily look at the points when it comes to Pavel Zacha. Had a wonderful U18, by the way. And I'd have the New Jersey Ducks. I think someone's going to jump up and take Pavel Zacha higher than a lot of people rank him. And I just think at the end of it, if you're New Jersey, hey, we got a lot of defensemen. That's been well told. We need some help up front. We have a history of Czech hockey players. We'll grab Zacha.
Yeah, they're either going to take Marner or Zacha, I think, in that spot, unless they go like Kraus on left wing. It's got to be a forward there. I mean, the fans understand how a team is built, but at this point, if they take a D at six,
can't.
I mean, unless Hanifin falls. I mean, if Hanifin falls, I think you probably have to take him at six, right? But
yeah,
he won't.
100. You can't at that point. It's funny because now we're at a position where with so many kids so close to being able to jump into the NHL right away, and you know, by necessity, by way of the salary cap, if you're going to be a successful team, you need players on team friendly, i.e., entry level contracts. We're probably at an era now where more so than ever in recent memory, you're drafting for need. I know everyone likes to say, oh, best player available. But I can tell you one person that we talked to in Quebec City, we talked to him about his NHL team, and he said point blank, we are drafting a defenseman. We didn't get a defenseman last year. We told our scouts we wanted a defenseman. We didn't get him. This year we are drafting a defenseman, whoever's available at our pick. We're drafting out. We're drafting for position. We're not just doing best player available. We're getting a defenseman.
Right. I'm fine with drafting for need if you're the Devils because they need currently right now. If you look at their depth chart, I'm ranked as the 12th highest forward in the organization. I mean, I don't even know how to tell you.
When's the last time you had the wheels on?
That's what I'm saying. I can barely go backwards, and I mostly played road hockey growing up, so I don't even know how that's possible. So I think that drafting for need, if you're the Devils in that spot, is fine. And that means probably Provorov at 7, like you have here, and Kraus at 8, and that's kind of how things are breaking.
Well,
if in fact the Leafs take Hanifin at 4.
Here's one thing. I just had right before the podcast, I had a conversation with someone about Columbus, who's close to the organization, and he said, "Don't be surprised." If Columbus, because you look at whether it's, you know, Reichel or Venberg or Oliver Bjorkstrand, Marco Dano, you know, they're taking a lot of forwards. They're going to be on the roster for a long time. Don't be surprised if they jump up and take Zach Werenski from Michigan at 8. I kind of see Lawson Kraus going there, but again, drafting out of like, what do we need help on? Where's our biggest area of need? Don't be surprised if Columbus grabs Zach Werenski out of all this.
Well, I think here's a real interesting question with Columbus, and let's park on the Blue Jackets for a second.
Yep.
They are a team that has been mentioned multiple times as potentially making a run at Dougie Hamilton as an RFA.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the situation with Columbus, courtesy of General Fanager, which is one of your de facto cap geek replacements.
Yep.
They've got $8.6 roughly $1 million in cap space. Okay.
Yep.
And that's a pretty formidable amount when you consider the fact they've got 14 forwards, 8 defensemen, and a goalie already under contract.
Mm-hmm.
So you could give Dougie Hamilton, I mean, if they wanted to, you could go as high as 6-5 on Dougie and offer sheet him and really put the screws to Boston. RFAs for a second. Brandon Saad. I think that there's an element of peer pressure that is being highly underestimated here. I know all these guys think it's a business at the end of the day. I know all these guys are going to be like, well, you got to get what you can. And Taves and Kane are in no place to tell anybody what they should or should not make in this league.
Right.
But don't you think there's an element of don't go out there and blow up this team, Brandon Saad, if you're the Blackhawks? And don't you think he's cognizant of that?
100%, because now you're starting to talk about Brandon Saad as being one of the core elements and as important as Duncan Keith, as important as, you know, Taves, important as Kane, as important as Hossa. Like, you're starting to hear him in those terms, and you're starting to see the whispers of, you know, who they're going to get rid of. I mean, the Patrick Sharp situation is directly relatable to Brandon Saad and his impending
contract.
Right,
the emergence of Brandon Saad. Right, exactly.
100%. So, I mean, those two are inextricably linked. And this is what you know, Bob Goodenow was saying about, you know, salary caps in 2004. They pit player against player. And in this case of Chicago, this pits Patrick Sharp versus Brandon Saad. Chicago can't have both. Who are you going to choose?
Yeah, exactly. And well, you take Brandon Saad. So, yeah. But I think that there's that element there. I don't want to play pop psychologist here, Dougie Hamilton, but inevitably you have to. Would he be of the same mindset? Would he be of the same mindset that if I sign a $6.5 million offer sheet from the Columbus Blue Jackets, then if I come back to Boston, I'm going to be ostracized for it? Or is it more like he's already taken less to stay, in theory?
Yeah, I think they've
nickel and dimed him a little bit.
Yeah. I think you need to start to follow, you know, who the Pied Piper is going to be in the NHL, and that's Connor McDavid. And if you're Dougie Hamilton, aren't you looking to Edmonton for said offer sheet? Edmonton doesn't need picks. They don't. Edmonton has money. Edmonton has a new building coming. Edmonton has Connor McDavid.
Edmonton has the guy who drafted Dougie Hamilton.
Has the guy that drafted Dougie Hamilton, like. To me, you know, the one thing about having a player like McDavid in your organization is he acts as a magnet for other players, and Edmonton hasn't had that before. You know, they've always
can he be that? But can he be that this summer though? Like, do they have to? I mean, here's the problem with Edmonton and the magnet theory.
They're talking about him like he invented oxygen.
But I know that. I know he's Connor McJesus. I get all that. But this team has had talent out the ass. For 4 years, they've done nothing. They've been hot garbage. Don't you have to see them prove it a little bit before you're Dougie Hamilton? You're like, I'll sign for, you know, 6-6 in Edmonton.
Yeah, that's why you don't do the offer sheet until October.
So you're saying he hangs out until October?
Yep. He's going to get paid either way. What's the rush?
Oof, man.
Uh-huh. Hey, man, listen, you want to put on big boy pants? There's big boy pants.
Could you imagine? What the hell is Boston doing in that case? Like,
that's right.
Like Boston's basically paralyzed right now, trying to figure out how to bring this kid back.
That's right.
You know.
So if let's say you're the Oilers, you know, say, hey, we're gonna do this. We're gonna do this in October. You got a week.
Wow, that'd be pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. But.
Two more drafty things, and I'll do some going postal with you before you rock it. Who's the player you think could be the Angelo Esposito of this draft? Is there anybody in particular that you think could be dropping down the draft board?
Oh, that's an awesome question. The thing about this year's list is. There's not a real consensus from, you know, I guess there's the top five guys, but from, you know, like 6 to 20, everyone's list is so different. So I don't know that there's going to be a Cam Fowler. I don't know if there's going to be a Jack Campbell. Like, I don't know if there's going to be that guy that really falls, because there's no, like, you can only fall when people are, you know, saying that you're falling, but there's no, like, Nick Ritchie, where everyone thought he would go a lot higher, and in retrospect, probably should have. Got a lot higher than he did. But because everyone's list is so different after those top five guys, I don't know that there's really an opportunity for someone to fall, if that makes any sense. Like, some people have, like, take the Seattle forward, Matthew Barzal. Some people have him, you know, into the, like, top seven. You know, have him like, hey, Philly, how do you turn up Matthew Barzal? Others are like, I don't know. I'll take him, but no higher than 13 in the Los Angeles position. So if he falls to 13 at Los Angeles, is that the drop? Is that Angelo Esposito? Well, when you don't really have a consensus on where the lists are at, it's kind of hard to see a drop. I don't think anyone in that top mix. Like, I don't think Mitch Marner is going to fall, you know, into the teens. I'd have a hard time believing that. And I don't think that, you know, Lawson Crouse will either. So there's no consensus, so I can't really see a drop.
The other interesting thing is you've got Ilias.
Let me throw one at you. Of all these players, is there one that, even if you've never had a chance to watch him play, just by reading about him, you're curious?
Yeah, I'm curious about Kyle Connor.
Oh yeah,
only because I've heard a lot of hype about him, and yep. And I think that he's also one of these guys that inevitably I think is going to wind up being on everybody's radar, you know, before he gets into the AHL and the NHL as well in his development. Yep. To watch him every week on NBCSN, for example. And then
I did a Reddit AMA yesterday, and one of the questions was about the USHL, and you know him and Brock Besser. This year, who just flat out scores 2 in a league that's been tough to score in. We're starting to see, and we're seeing it more. I mean, I remember once upon a time, you know, USHL was, oh, look, they got someone in the NHL in the 7th round. Isn't that cute, USHL?
But hooray!
Now consistently, you're seeing players from the USHL get sent to the NHL in the 1st round. So it's that, right. that pattern continues.
Right. And then the other guy is the guy that I was actually going to ask you about, because I'm a big fan of goalies, and I find it to be so odd that goalies are no longer a thing that are taken in the 1st round.
Yep.
But you have Ilya Samsonov going at 20. I think consensus is that he will be a 1st rounder. That's a little bit higher than most have him going. But like you said, it's one, necessity, and two, maybe because he's been playing over in Russia, a little bit closer to being NHL ready than anybody else you'd be able to take in the draft between the pipes.
Yeah, really good, great size, really athletic. He is, you know, with all due respect to Mackenzie Blackwood and Barry, he's the best goaltender available in the draft. And I know I have him in at Minnesota at 20. Let me ask you this. Would it shock you if Edmonton took him at 16?
That's pretty high, man.
I know.
Pick, isn't it? No?
But that's the thing. Like, if you want the player, like if you want the guy, I mean, I have Edmonton taken at the defense. I got him to kind of come out of the 1st round with Connor McDavid and a defense. I got him taking Thomas Chabot, the great skater from St. John.
Mm-hmm.
But would it shock you to see him take a goal? I mean, two positions they need to shore up after they deal with McDavid, the blue line and a net. And unless you're going to trade for a goaltender come Friday, do a lot worse than taking Ilya Samsonov at 16.
This is true. Although I think at the end of the day, they would be better served going with a string of veterans rather than trying to develop their own.
Yeah, think about it. I mean, Darnell Nurse is going to be an excellent defenseman there. Oscar Klefbom is going to be a good defenseman in Edmonton. The question now they're asking internally is, what do we have in Martin Marincin? How good is this guy going to be? How much value do we put in Martin Marincin?
And wasn't that the guy that Vancouver did Vancouver want him in the Schneider trade or in another deal? Where they were talking to Edmonton, they were trying to steal him away.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I can't remember which. It was a defenseman for sure. It might have been Marincin. It could have been. I can't remember off the top of my head. But you're right. That was the ask back from Edmonton was going to be higher because those are two teams to compete against each other.
Well, there you go. Well, so Jeffy's educated all of you. Look for his draft mock draft thing on Sportsnet because it's very good and
here's the thing: you'll look back on it, you know, Saturday morning, and it'll be awful because all it takes is one team to go off the board, and then everything changes. All these mock drafts are more than anything else is a neat little exercise to sort of see, you know, who needs what and who could go where and which people have certain players ranked higher and for what reasons. That's all it is.
Right. When Buffalo takes Taro Tsujimoto at 2, and all of a sudden Eichel falls down to the Coyotes. Right, exactly.
That would never happen. You wouldn't just throw away a pick from some fictitious hockey player or the son of a Hall of Fame netminder now, would you?
They wanted to make an old man smile, and they did, and then
they didn't sign the kid.
Yeah, and then he stopped smiling. It became a giant pain in the ass. They didn't sign the kid after that. So that's what happens.
Lesson be learned.
All right, a couple of going postals. No need to do the theme song there, Sammy. We got a press for time. Brian Westrick writes in, who was the worst team to ever win the Stanley Cup? And conversely, who is the best team to ever come up short? Wow.
Hell of a question. You could make the argument that it was the 2006 Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, I think you could make that argument for sure.
You know, some really great individual players. It all came together in a year where the NHL was trying to relearn how to play the game. And it took them how long after that Stanley Cup win to get back to any type of modicum of respectability? First kick at it, I would say. I would take Carolina.
I would agree, and I would also, I don't think that they're the worst. I think there's other worse. But of the three Devils Cups, I think 2003 was the weakest of the three.
You know what? And maybe the best team that never did it was that Rangers squad that lost out to the Boston Bruins. Maybe that was, and we're going back to the 70s here, but maybe that was, because that team probably had some Stanley Cups in it, but God, were they playing in it?
Yeah, and that's
a tricky Montreal or Boston, like, stack team.
That's a tricky question. That's a tricky question, because I think that there are probably some Red Wings teams that were infinitely, amazingly talented, but they probably eventually won a cup.
Well, okay, how about this one then? How about that Flyers team with Legion of Doom? How about that team?
Oh God, that was a pretty good team.
Oh man.
Maybe not between the pipes,
What about that Flyers team that had, you know, Marsh and Crossman and McCrimmon on the blue line and Ron Hextall in net and Brian Propp, and like, maybe that Flyers team that just, well, sorry, you got to play Edmonton in the final and you're not going to beat Edmonton.
Yeah, no, that's a good one too. Jesse Mitchell good writes question. In, I've heard Jeff mention quite a few times, there's dumb and then there's hockey dumb. I've also heard lots of scouts say things like he's got tremendous hockey IQ or hockey sense.
Yeah.
I've met a few players and some exceeded my typical jock expectations. My question is, knowing that there are many different avenues of intelligence, have you come across people in the suit and tie business of hockey who have been successful despite not having the most impressive intellects? Is there anybody who's been great but dumb? I think it's the essential question here.
Wow. That's a hell of a question.
Let me jump in on this one, because I'll say this about, because I was trying to noodle through a column on Joel Quenneville that I never got a chance to write.
Okay.
So I'll just write half of it here. I think the reason that Quenneville doesn't get the same respect that Babcock gets, or that some other coaches get, is because essentially he speaks like a reporter writes down notes in his notebook. It's all very clipped sentences. It's all very direct. It feels like an abridged version of what someone like Mike Babcock would otherwise tell you. And I think he doesn't get deeply philosophical. I mean, you compare the way he did his press conferences with those of John Cooper, and it was like comparing, you know, the flowery prose of one author to someone who's writing, you know, pulp fiction and yeah, you know, like a Mickey Spillane novel or something like that. So I think in the case of Quenneville, and not to say he's dumb, because he's not, but he comes off a little bit more blue-collar dumb jock than someone like Babcock does, or someone like Cooper does, or someone like Bylsma does. And ultimately, I think it's held him back from getting the same level of respect that these guys have gotten as like coaching geniuses, because he's a bit of a lunkhead when he's in front of a mic, and he's just kind of like a gentle giant with a big mustache.
Yeah, I mean, as far as being a hockey guy, I think he's amongst the elite in the NHL. Like, you look at all the players that have been booted off that Chicago Blackhawks team, and you could put together a playoff squad of all the team, of all the guys together they've had to jettison for salary cap reasons, and every year Chicago's in the conversation. But don't you think that our perception of Joel Quenneville now is really beginning to change? Like, we had the Hockey Canada press conference yesterday where they named the six executives that are going to be running the team for the World Cup of Hockey, and as the question turns to coaching quite quickly, of course Mike Babcock's name is there because of the two gold medals. But soon after, I mean, right away now, people are saying Joel Quenneville. I think it's bizarre that it took him three Stanley Cups to get there. Last time I checked, Mike Babcock didn't have three Stanley Cups. Sure, he has two gold medals. But now we're having the conversation as well. Wait a minute. Maybe we've kind of missed the boat here on Joel Quenneville.
I agree, and I hope that's the case. But I still think there's this perception that he is the right guy for this team and not necessarily a guy who could repeat these results elsewhere. And that's not fair to him.
I mean, he's had success elsewhere.
Oh no, he's had.
Look at that, like, again, I keep coming back. Like, one of the things that still mystifies me is how he got fired after getting that Colorado team into the playoffs. It had zero business being in the playoffs. A lot of that was Joel Quenneville, sure, the goaltender.
But
so much of that was Quenneville.
It's Jack Adams' disease. It's this notion that you can't you can't be a good coach unless there's tangible evidence of you making something out of nothing. And that's such an insult to guys like him. It's in some way something that's never touched Scottie Bowman, even though he did the same damn thing, which is lead some extraordinarily talented teams to the promised land.
No one talks about the Buffalo years.
right, exactly. So like to me, that's as much of an amazing accomplishment for a coach than anything else. Is the because here's the thing: you could be really great at X's and O's, and you could be really great at line matching, and you could be really great at systems and everything else. If you can't manage egos, if you can't manage millionaires. All a bunch of guys who all think they should be playing top line. We only have three spots for them. If you can't manage that, you're never going to win. And he does it better than anybody.
And you know what? And you know what he knows how to do? And Lindy Ruff does this maybe better than anybody else. And he did it for so many years in Buffalo. Is he knows when the guys are sick of his voice. And it's a tough thing for a coach to stand down and say, you know what? They don't need to hear me at practice today. They don't. And Quenneville gets that. Quenneville knows when, okay, they're getting sick of me. Kitch, Kevin, get in there. You guys run practice today. You guys do this.
And the other thing about Quenneville that no one seems to ever want to bring up is the fact that it took two things for him to coach the Blackhawks. It took Jonathan Toews and a young, young core of players getting Denny Savard fired. So everybody who says, oh, that's such a terrible thing that this happens and blah, blah, blah. And players should... Now, if they didn't mutiny against Savard, then it could have gone in a different direction that season. Because remember, he got fired in like the first week of the season.
Three games in, like last Philadelphia territory.
Right. And the other thing is that they had to take a chance on Quenneville. He was coming off a DUI. He was extronomically high. I mean, he came with not some level of risk, but at least some level of apprehension. Where is this really the guy we want to bring into this situation?
But this was an interesting one because you remember before he was hired as a head coach, remember what they hired him as?
As a scout.
Right. There he is, Joel Quenneville. Scout just kind of hanging around the ring. So
hanging around the ring, yeah.
It's Joel Quenneville. I'm a scout now.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm off to Chicoutimi this weekend, and I'm in Val d'Or, and then I'm going to sneak over to Sudbury, watch the Wolves, and make my way.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
hey, Mr. Nolan. Mr. Nolan, good news. We got the scouting report back about your opponent tonight. What's this name at the bottom of the scouting report? Dan Bylsma. Well, that's an interesting name. Yeah, Mr. Nolan, he's one of our new scouts.
Oh, wonderful. He keeps telling me to play Grigorenko more. What the hell is this?
All right, one more before we let you go, and then Helena St. James is going to come on so we could talk about this bet.
Sweet.
Shut up.
Okay.
John Daugherty writes in, while it's not economically feasible for all 30 teams to spend near the salary cap each year, do you think the NHL benefits from having various teams occupy the salary floor? Case in point, would the NHL be better off if a team like Arizona was less monetarily restrained, or does having salary floor teams provide competitively beneficial contract liquidity by providing cap-strapped teams with trade partners? Well, I think it's definitely the latter. I mean,
essentially saying is it good that there are teams in the NHL that are essentially existing as the Montreal Expos once did in Major League Baseball, as the farm
precisely
team, the farm team for the rest of the league.
The farm team for the rest of the league, but also a team that could absorb assets and contracts to allow flexibility for the high priced teams in the league. Well, look no further than the Coyotes example vis-a-vis the New York Rangers. How many times have we seen the Rangers and Coyotes connect on trades that involve salary? A lot.
Yeah, the Coyotes want the player with the higher cap hit but the less actual cash paid out, and the opposite is true of the Rangers.
The only thing I'll say against that idea, though, is that, I mean, there is fallout from it, which is that you have teams that are in a perpetual struggle to draw fans and be successful, and eventually those teams go. I mean, eventually they're not in the league anymore because they need to relocate or whatever.
You know what it is? It's false starting a team. It's continually false starting a team. And you want to use like a wrestling analogy. It's like giving someone like a big win over a named guy, and then followed up with him getting, you know, squashed by a mid-card guy 2 weeks later.
Daniel, like, Brian.
Oh, false start. Yeah, false start. False start. False start. It's frustrating.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, when next we speak, it'll be face-to-face in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, when do you get in? I'm in tomorrow at noon.
I'm in tomorrow around noon as well. We might bump into each other at the airport.
Very nice.
Very, very excited.
I will see you in Fort Lauderdale,
maybe,
my friend.
Maybe I'll hop on the Sportsnet stretch Hummer limo that they'll undoubtedly have for you guys.
Oh, the cab? The cabs or the shuttles that were taken.
Oh, that's right. They spent billions of dollars on a television contract. Chances are you'll be arriving at the hotel in a rickshaw.
Like, you know, you're talking to Jeff Merrick here, right? Like, I'm like the one step away from getting a bucket and a mop and turning the lights out at the end of the night.
Oh, what? You can't get on board the Strombo helicarrier that he's
Strombo?
Flying from Toronto,
no.
Toronto to no. Fort Lauderdale?
Actually, he rode his motorcycle out to Los Angeles. He's in the process of riding it to Las Vegas now, I think. And then he wouldn't be riding his motorcycle to Fort Lauderdale. Then he's taking a plane from Vegas.
Oh,
he's
God.
His really? Bike in Vegas.
We did this entire show without.
He'll be there Thursday.
I did this entire show without talking about the awards. Price, Hart, Price, Vesna. Who wins the Norris?
Geez, I haven't thought a second about the awards.
Yeah, neither have I, really.
I really haven't. Jeez, I don't know. Who do you have winning the Norris? I'll take that guy.
Who the hell knows? I mean, I think I had – did I have Carlson winning? I don't know who I had my pick.
Is Benny Potvin in the – did he get nominated?
I don't even know if I'm allowed to discuss my pick or not. That's the real question.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
the vote.
That.
The votes are all.
Now, is that official? Professional hockey writers, you're not allowed to.
We're allowed to discuss it afterwards.
Okay.
We're allowed to discuss it afterwards. So the question is it Doughty, Carlson, or Subban? I had Carlson, I think, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's Doughty.
I was going to say in that mix, I would have had Doughty. I don't vote on these things. I'm not important enough.
The only two that are up in the air in my eyes are the Norris, which you just talked about, the Calder and the Adams. So Ekblad, Goudreau, Stone. The more I talk to people, the more it sounds like Stone's going to win, which is stupid.
I go Ekblad.
I would hope so. And then the Adams is Hartley, Laviolette, Vigneault, and I would imagine that the winner,
Hartley.
I bet the winner ends up being Hartley, but it should be Laviolette. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, it'll be Hartley two things, because expectations and then losing Mark Giordano and still getting into playoffs.
And more heavy lifting than taking a team that everybody thought was moribund and making them into a first place team for, six months.
Yeah, but that team had, Shea Weber and Pekka Rinne.
Oh, yeah. Because, right, and really a dynastic team under Barry Trotz, making the playoffs every season with those players.
Listen, I ain't disagreeing with you. I think it'll be Hartley.
Well, I'll see you down there, my brother, and I will, and we'll drink and make merry.
Thursday, don't forget the party. It is at Blondie's. Have we made that perfectly clear? The establishment formerly known as Dirty Blondes does not exist. Although, actually, it does exist. It just has a different name. So
this is very Bar Rescue. We talked about that with Dave Lozo on the show yesterday.
Okay,
Bar Rescue
I saw a bunch of references to it on Twitter yesterday. I don't know what Bar Rescue is.
Bar Rescue is a show where a dude goes to a bar, and he's an expert on turning around bars that aren't working. And
really?
And it's a great show. Inevitably,
I love that concept.
Yeah, inevitably, the joke in every episode is that he takes a name that's very distinct, like Dirty Blondes, and then makes it something generic. But the name on the show wouldn't be Blondies. It would be something even more. It would be like the Fort Lauderdale Brew Saloon would be like the name of it. Like, it becomes the most generic name possible.
Hmm.
And that's his solution for the bar.
And this works?
No.
Essentially, it's remove all personality and flavor from the bar and make it, generic and widespread.
Yeah, turn dive bars into theme bars is basically what he does. It's kind of a thing.
Oh, okay. Jurassic Bar. Okay, I got you.
Jurassic Bar. Now, that'd be a wonderful theme bar. All right, we'll talk to you down there.
All right, dude, see ya.
All right, Helena St. James, come on in a second. Jurassic Bar. There's a concept that I'm going to have to work out in my head a little bit as far as what you do there. I mean, I imagine every night ends at closing time with everybody being slaughtered by a dinosaur that they felt was in containment but then someone tried to steal some embryos and the electric fences got turned off. It's probably how it would go at closing time, I imagine. If you've not seen it on Puck Daddy, top 20 UFA forwards yesterday, top 15 UFA defensemen today, the list, and both of them are super depressing because it is a terrible, terrible free agent market. I think at least half of the defensemen on our list, which of course being it's a list of 15, that's 7.5, are over the age of 37. Like, literally, I had to turn to Cooper and say, this guy's dead. And he's like, cross him off then. Mike Green's an interesting one. I wonder where he ends up, and I wonder in what situation he ends up, and I wonder whether or not he'd go back to Washington for a super reduced fee. I don't know. Here's someone I hope will also settle for a super reduced fee. Helena St. James of the Detroit Free Press joins us now after a long wait, and many people always asking me about the bet that we made. For those who don't remember, I made a bet that the Detroit Red Wings would not make the playoffs this year. And according to the standings in front of me, they did. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, the thing that we bet was a case of champagne, if memory serves, correct?
It was, and then you upped it to Dom Pignon.
Shit. When we say a case, do we mean like a traditional case? Or I was thinking more along like a box that contains bottles.
A box that contains bottles? I mean, the ones I see at Costco are like, what, 9 bottles, 12 bottles?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the case. I've seen cases that contain maybe like 6 bottles.
you want the case to be weakened by the Canadian dollar is what I'm thinking.
I here's the thing. I don't know.
See, your fault was not putting a cap on this bet. There should always be an upper limit.
Yes. Right. I think I've somehow tripped into having a luxury tax bet when in fact I should have had a hard cap bet is the problem. I think this is one of those situations, and you've known me for a bit, where I may have spoken out of turn here. I think I've gotten myself into some trouble as far as settling up this bet, including how to get you the booze. I don't even know how to get you the booze.
Oh, can I ship you? Wonderful service UPS provides.
Can I ship you booze over state lines like that? I assume I can. I don't know.
Well, if not, we are living in the wrong country.
Damn right. All right. Let it be known that I'm gonna settle the bet. I think that I can have, at the very least, editorial control over what a case is,
okay.
But I will not shirk my responsibilities on label.
I never expected that you would.
You should have totally expected that I would, because I spent the entire day trying to figure out how to weasel my way out of all of this, and then I remembered that I did say those two words to you about the Dom and the Perignon. And then I said, oh, shit, that's right. I've actually specified the label so I can't go back and get, like, something that some French guy made in his bathtub. All right. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I will procure Ms. St. James's address, and I'm sure that you will take a celebratory photo with the beverages when they arrive.
I absolutely will.
All right. And just to make sure here, we're talking about actual liquid. I can't get you just props, wood carvings of the bottles, maybe plush dolls.
Like some kind of champagne powder that NASA no doubt supplies to its astronauts before they go off to the International Space Station?
You know, knowing the price of astronaut ice cream, I doubt that astronaut Dom Perignon is any cheaper than what I'm going to have to lay out for this. All right. Now listen, now that that's settled, and now everybody can calm down and back off, and I'm not gonna renege. I was wrong. Let's talk about the team I was wrong about. It's now official today that Tony Granato and Chris Chelios are Blashill's assistants. Is that correct?
Chelios is not going to be behind the bench. That's Pat Fershweiler and Tony Granato going to be behind the bench with him. Chelios is going to work level of defensemen kind of keep an eye on things during games and trial here and there. But it's kind of similar to the role he had with Grand Rapids, working with the defensemen primarily.
So that's interesting. So he's done this before in the organization, and is this the precursor to anything for him, or is this him just trying to get back into the game a little bit?
You know, I think it's him getting back to the NHL level a little bit, and also just kind of cutting back on driving back and forth to Grand Rapids a lot. And, you know, there's also some young defensemen in Detroit. I mean, Danny DeKeyser, future building block for the team. They think very highly of him. And next year they're probably, I'd say, 95% certain that at least one young guy, either Alexei Marchenko or Xavier Ouellette, is going to be taking up another defense spot. So, you know that there's young defensemen for Chelyus to work with in Detroit as well. And, you know, he's got some duties with the U.S. junior hockey team as well, right nearby in Plymouth. So he has a lot on his plate for the coming season.
I think every time an organization goes down this road, whether it's with a Larry Robinson or with a Scott Stevens or with anybody else, I really think it works. I love this move a lot, actually, and I think it's only going to benefit them with a burgeoning young blue line. Let me ask you about that blue line, though, because I was writing a depressing feature called The Top 15 Unrestricted Free Agent Defensemen.
I saw that, and I knew it was fiction. It has to be fiction.
It's terrible.
There's not 15 good defensemen on this year's market.
It is.
You know what the history of it should be? What's that Dickens story at Bleak House? That's what the title of this year's free agent market is.
It's so bad, and it's gonna be, you know, we're all gonna sit around and watch TSN and Sportsnet on July 1, and it's just gonna be like, it's gonna be guys checking their Blackberries and crickets is all we're gonna hear. But one name kind of stood out for me because I don't think he's necessarily come back to Pittsburgh, and I know Detroit was in on him last year. Is there any fit for Christian Ehrhoff with the Red Wings, you think, going forward?
I'm not sure they like him as much. Maybe I think they're going to take a harder look at Mike Green out of Washington. But I think the problem with Green is, you know, they could get him for 2 years and even $5-6 million in that range that he's going to want. I think they'd like it, but he's probably going to want 4 or 5 years, right? And that kind of term is probably going to be a deterrent for them. But they like him. I mean, he can provide offensively. He shoots right, which, you know, is something they don't have hardly anything of in their system. So I think maybe he would be a little bit higher on their list than Ehrhoff.
Yeah, and he's obviously also someone who needs a change of venue. I've thought in the worst way for several years with Washington. So I remember hearing that too, and that's a good option for them, I think, in Mike Green for sure. Overall, off-season outlook here for Detroit, what are we looking at? Where are we going? What are we looking to add if you're the Red Wings?
Well, they'd like to add a big top six forward. You know, I mean, Johan Franzen has had multiple head injuries, and at best his status for the coming season is iffy. You know, if he can play at all, I don't think they can bank on him being healthy the entire season. And, you know, that's why they went out and got Eric Cole at the trade deadline, and then he had the neck injury that forced him to pretty much stop playing. So they're looking at that, you know, I mean, easier said than done. I know that they like Pulaski, but I'm not sure. If I were him, I would certainly hit the UFA market, but maybe he wants to stay in Anaheim. And, you know, they're always looking for a defenseman as well, but Danny DeKeyser has kind of provided them with more offense than they originally thought he'd be capable of doing. And they've got a guy in Ryan Sproul. They're going to, who's probably their most offensively gifted defenseman in the minors. Not quite as far along as Marchenko and Ouellette, but you see somebody who can help them down the road. I mean, they're kind of, I think, you know, I would expect them to look first and foremost to developing from within, and then maybe if there's a trade out there that that makes sense for them, they jump at that. They're really, really unenthused about the free agent market.
As we all are. In talking to Ken Holland and talking to Blashill after the Babcock departure, where is this team right now? Like, there are veterans on the roster. They obviously want to win. There's a good influx of kids. There's a new coach behind the bench. Is it still in contention cup championship mode, or is it in a weird place between transitioning away from Zetterberg and Datsyuk into something different?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, it really, really stung for them this year to lose that game 7 to Tampa Bay. I mean, they this year, you know, they came into the playoffs in such much better shape than last year. They were so hurt going into that Boston series. I mean, Zetterberg wasn't even available. It was just kind of like, okay, you know,
right.
That was what it was. But this year, I mean, they were largely healthy. They felt really good about the way they were playing. And, you know, Game 7 was a 1-0 game until the last 2 minutes. And it might have turned out differently had Nicholas Cronwall been able to play. I mean, their top defenseman was suspended and Sedlicki wasn't able to play. So I know Mike Babcock wasn't the only one involved with the team who spent 24 hours or more sulking about that. So I think they feel they're in good shape. You know, I mean, Pavel Datsyuk, you're probably not going to get a full season out of him anymore, it looks like. But when he does play, he's at the top of his game. Zetterberg, it was a little bit disturbing how unproductive he was the second half. But I think that they feel good overall about what they have. They like their situation in goal with Mrazek, you know, I mean, certainly finishing as number one. But Jimmy Howard is going to spend his summer trying to, you know, get back in shape so he can reclaim that job. And the guy we need to talk about is Dylan Larkin, their first-round pick from last year. He's just had a phenomenal...
Oh, he's been insane.
Everywhere he went. So there is, you know, they are headed into training camp in fall thinking, let's see if this guy, you know, can push for a spot. I mean, he's surpassed at every other level he's been at, and he only turns 19 next month.
That's awesome. Okay, cool. And finally, I can't remember if we spoke about – I don't think we spoke about Babcock together on this podcast after that the Dog and Pony show. But having covered him, having seen him, having worked with him, everything else, what did you think of the grand revelation of Mike Babcock in Toronto, the press conference, the whole thing?
I don't think it was that much of a surprise. You know, I mean, he's a very talented coach, and he's, like many coaches, has an ego, and Toronto gave him a lot of money, and for him it's a chance to come in and be a savior of a franchise that, you know, has just been mired in mud for decades that can't quite seem to get out of it. So if he turns that franchise around, I mean, he'll have the key to every city in Canada, right? So I think for him, you know, it's an opportunity to now go be challenged somewhere else. And after having made sure that all of his kids finished high school, I mean, that was an important part of why he stayed in Detroit for 10 years. And for Detroit, you know, it's a chance, new voice from a guy who's been with the organization for a long time, coached half the team that's already in Detroit while they were with Grand Rapids as youngsters. And so there's great continuity there. And also, you know, the Wings, they get a third-round draft pick out of it. And maybe it was time to say goodbye to Babcock as well. I mean, one playoff run, one the last 4 years, kind of below what the Wings want to see happen at that time of year.
Well, I am also, as you know, a creature of no ego. So I bow to you. You were correct in your assessment of the Red Wings. I probably should have not wagered with someone who covers the team on a daily basis, as I don't, now that I think about it. But there's a lot that I have to reconsider in hindsight about this entire situation. But congratulations to you. I will get your address, and I will ship out your spoils in due time.
I look forward to that. Thank you.
Elena St. James, thank you very much. From the Detroit Free Press, everybody follow her. Well, obviously, I imagine I have also draft coverage in the next couple of days as well. And so she won the bet. So now everyone knows that we can work these things out like adults. Couldn't weasel my way out of the label thing, but maybe weasel my way out of the case thing. And I know there's going to be somebody out there who's like, well, the case is defined as... No. A case is a box with flaps, and you tape it, and you send it someplace. That's a case. Case of 4, case of 6, case of 12, case of 24, case. Usually, if it's a box, and it's sealed, and there's stuff inside, and it's an even number of stuffs, it's a case. That's my wiggle room. It's all I got. It's all I got. All right, thanks to Jeff Merrick. Thanks to Elena St. James. Thanks to Sam behind the glass or wherever he sits. I have no idea. Not been in Toronto since Sam came aboard. So I don't, where do you sit, Sam? Are you behind glass right now?
I'm in a room sort of behind glass, kind of, yeah.
But there is glass that you're sitting
behind.
Oh,
there's definitely glass involved, yeah. That's an accurate
statement.
So
if I say you're behind the glass, that's still technically true.
Bingo. Okay. Bang on.
Two things real quick. Jeff Merrick will be on the Keith Olbermann show tonight at 5:15 on ESPN2. So do check that out. He failed to mention it before, but that's what's happening. Talking NHL draft. Someone over there is a big MBSW fan, and we appreciate getting the platform over there. So that'll be fun. And then speaking of podcasts, I listened to the Mark Maron Obama podcast, and it was pretty good. I mean, it's obviously not going to be anywhere near what Maron normally does, getting to deep truths and personal pain and all that stuff. But I thought their conversations about politics and stuff actually resonated to me as a sports fan, because I know 90% of the conversations that I have with people about sports are kept at sports, maybe trickle into pop culture, but rarely ever traffic in the dark arts of politics, because that will derail shit. And that's, again, like we talked about with the Blackhawks and crossing demographics and crossing racial barriers and things like that, with that story I wrote a couple weeks ago. Like, if we keep it on a base level of conversation and shared interest, then we're all okay, because that kind of pushes aside the things that divide us. And maybe we've eventually traversed those obstacles when we already have an established understanding of each other through these commonalities. So who knows? But that Obama's got some good stuff on that podcast about that. And that is about it. From when next you hear us, we'll be in Fort Lauderdale doing a little potty from down there. And there you go. Thanks, everybody. If you Blondies, Thursday night, 9 o'clock. Come say hi. If you need any further details, hit up Paige Lewis on Twitter or email us at puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. All the details of the party are on a post that I put on the blog this morning. So there you go. Looking forward to seeing you there, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.